Good morning, friends. Welcome into the Mike Allen Show here on this Monday, February 15th. Halfway through, actually a little past halfway through the month of February, 29 days this year, leap year and all that. Hope you're doing well. Got a lot to talk about, a lot that happened over this past weekend. Of course, the Holy Father, Pope Francis, down in Mexico after his historic meeting Friday with the Patriarch of the Russian Orthodox Church, Kirill. And we'll talk about that a little bit, as well as his trip to see the Dark Virgin there, Our Lady of Guadalupe there, Tepeyac, and following along a lot with that, with Enos San Martin and John Allen with Crux Now, who are accompanying him. Hoping to have Enos San Martin on the program a little bit later in the week to tell us about her experience with the Holy Father in Mexico, where he's receiving, as you would expect, a powerful welcome there. And, of course, his big mass that'll come up on Wednesday that he'll be celebrating at Ciudad Juarez within sight of the U.S.-Mexican border should be pretty significant indeed. Also, of course, the passing of Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia. Always a big deal, of course, when a Supreme Court justice passes away. But I think by many accounts and many bipartisan counts, Antonin Scalia, one of the more influential justices to ever be on the bench. And he was, of course, a devout and practicing Catholic. We'll talk about Justice Scalia a little bit and some of his legacy, what we can learn from him about a whole host of things, about bringing your faith to bear on your work, also the art of friendship and a judicial modesty. Interestingly enough, for a guy who seemed to have a healthy ego, he also had a profound belief in judicial modesty, which, quite frankly, we could use more of. Also, today, the feast day of St. Claude de la Colombière. We'll talk a little bit about him, the French saint, and why saints sometimes come in bunches. And, of course, we'll get into some sports stuff. Yeah, I just do that for you guys. Myself, sports, no big deal, but I know that you, the listener, demand it. So we will get into a little bit sports. All-Star NBA weekend this weekend and some college basketball and all the rest. 573-4BREAD-4, if you want to chime in. I'll give you the question of the day in the next segment, musically oriented today. 573-4BREAD-4, or you can and you can call or text that number, or you can email mikeallenshow@gmail.com, or you can post your thoughts on Facebook or on Twitter. So as I said, today, the feast day of St. Claude de la Colombière. He was a Jesuit priest and a confessor of St. Margaret Mary Alacoque. St. Margaret Mary, really known for the one who had the visions accompanying the devotion to the Sacred Heart of Jesus. He was her confessor. He listened to her. He actually believed her, unlike some of her other sisters in her convent. Died at a very young age, at the age of 41, a missionary and ascetical writer. We're going to pray this prayer for our prayer today, this prayer of St. Claude de la Colombière from the 17th century in France. It's called a despair prayer, and it's really perfect for us during this year of mercy that Pope Francis instituted beginning December 8th of this past year, because it's a prayer not only about revealing through our own obedience to God, the power and the grace of God, but also the mercy that we show to sinners, which is when we talk about the face of the Father, the face of divine mercy in Jesus Christ, that we who bear the name of Christ need to bear the face of mercy to each other. And this prayer of St. Claude de la Colombière, beautiful one indeed. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit, amen. Lord, I am in this world to show your mercy to others. Other people will glorify you by making visible the power of your grace by their fidelity and constancy to you. For my part, I will glorify you by making known how good you are to sinners, that your mercy is boundless, and that no sinner, no matter how great his offenses, should have reason to despair of pardon. If I have grievously offended you, my Redeemer, let me not offend you even more by thinking that you are not kind enough to pardon me. Amen. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. Amen. Just came across that prayer this morning. I love it. I will glorify you. Not so much, I mean, certainly I'm sure that St. Claude wanted to glorify the Lord through his own fidelity and constancy and faithfulness, but I will glorify you, he says, by making known how good you are to sinners and that your mercy is boundless, and that no sinner, no matter how great his offenses, should have reason to despair of pardon. Despair, a word that speaks of being beyond hope. None of us are beyond hope. I remember going through a particularly dark period of my life a number of years ago. Gosh, it's been quite a while now that I was in this really dark place. And my sister, my older sister, really to whom I credit my coming to the Christian faith, I had been baptized and had a vague belief in God, but it was my sister in many ways who, through living out her relationship with Christ and being transformed by it as a teenager, really drew me into a deeper understanding of what it meant to be a Christian beyond simply a code of ethics or some sort of vague belief in a distant God. But it was my sister, when I went through a particularly difficult period in my life, that she wrote me a letter that meant the world to me. And in that letter, she quoted, I believe it was Corrie ten Boom, the Dutch Christian who wrote the book The Hiding Place, who was someone who had a remarkable life enduring the Nazi occupation and some of her own family members killed in the concentration camps. They were hiding Jews. That was the title of the book, The Hiding Place. But Corrie ten Boom once said this, and my sister wrote this in the letter, letting me know that she was standing with me in prayer, and she said this quote from Corrie ten Boom, "There is no pit so deep that God is not deeper still." No pit so deep that God is not deeper still. And I love how St. Claude here at this prayer also says, "If I have grievously offended you, my Redeemer, let me not offend you even more by thinking you're not kind enough to pardon me." As if God takes it as a personal slight if we think that our sin is beyond his ability to forgive, that his grace and mercy are not infinite in nature. Beautiful prayer for sure. I also want us to remember and to consider keeping our prayers, prayer for the repose of the soul of Antonin Scalia, the Supreme Court Justice. And we'll talk about him a good bit more over the course of this show. Think of the world of Antonin Scalia as a judicial mind and also as a Catholic witness. Pray for the repose of his soul. And also want to pray for the repose of the soul of Lavinia Spirito's mother. Lavinia, she does a weekly show, Real Living, on the weekend. She also does a show with me called Unpacking the Gospel, in which we look at the week's gospel reading. She's the co-founder of the Catholic Way Bible Study and the lead teacher in that ministry. And Lavinia's mother passed away. Got the opportunity to go to the visitation yesterday, her mother, LeGrand. And so we want to pray for the repose of the soul of these two. And then any that you have in your heart and mind, any of our beloved dead, we pray, eternal rest grant unto them, O Lord, and let perpetual light shine upon them. May the souls of the faithful departed, through the mercy of God, rest in peace. Indeed. St. Claude de la Colombière. What I like about St. Claude, he's one of these French saints from the 17th century. And I remember reading a few years ago the book by Sherry Waddell called Forming Intentional Disciples. A very popular book that really put its finger on, in many ways, some of the contemporary struggles in the Catholic Church in terms of the retention of Catholics and the fact that there are a large number of persons who are perhaps cultural or nominal Catholics, but who do not have a lived relationship with Jesus Christ on a daily basis. And the whole emphasis of the ministry that she's a part of, called the Catherine of Siena Institute, and a theme of this book is really that the disciples do not simply happen. Disciples of Jesus don't just happen. They have to be formed and shaped. And we do that for each other, by the way. And she makes a point early in the book, and I don't have the book in front of me, but she makes a point of saints in 17th century France There was a season there after the Protestant Reformation, which really bitterly divided France, and there were these wars of religion in which there were so many who died, and there was such a cynicism, perhaps, that permeated the French culture in terms of faith, people wounded, battered. But as is typically the case, God never leaves himself without a witness. And she makes a point of really the fantastic generation of saints that emerged in 17th century France, which had such a renewing impact upon the Catholic faith in France. And she mentions people like St. Francis de Sales or St. Jane de Chantal, for example, who had this spiritual mentorship relationship. She could have also mentioned, and I can't recall whether she did, St. Margaret Mary Alacoque and today's saint, St. Claude de la Colombière. And it raises this whole issue, and maybe we'll get into this a little bit more in the next hour, why saints in the Catholic Church, it seems, those canonized saints, those saints that are identified and recognized by the Church for their publicly known piety, that saints tend to come in bunches, in batches. And I don't think that's by accident. And I think it says something to us in our current generation that we might well consider. But we'll talk about that more a little bit later. Question of the day, musically oriented in the next segment. This is The Mike Allen Show. Minutes past the hour, you're back into the Mike Allen Show. That song, number one, 1957 on this day, Elvis Presley, Too Much, segues to my question of the day, very tidily, which is, what is your favorite musical decade? And I'm thinking, you know, primarily popular music, but a few of you have already chimed in on social media with your classical music bona fides by saying, you know, whatever, the 1840s or whatever. Ha ha. Point taken, but primarily talking about pop music here. What's your favorite musical decade? Now, I understand setting up decades of music is a little bit artificial, right? But I don't know any other way to do it. So what's your favorite decade? That, of course, from the 1950s. And what I'm going to be doing through several of our bumper musics here is picking out a number one song on this date from that decade. And we'll do it progressively. So that's from the 50s and then next segment, 60s and 70s and on like that through the course of the program. That question of the day came to me because for some reason lately I've really been into some 80s Phil Collins stuff, particularly 80s Phil Collins ballads. There were a few balladeers in the 80s, in my opinion, quite as good as, is he Sir Phil now? Has he been knighted? Phil Collins. Anyway. So if you've got a thought on that, maybe you and you want to argue why, because I need an explanation too. It's not just, you know, that this is what you like. You got to tell me why. And so, like, I'll give you a couple of examples. We've already gotten some responses on this on Facebook. You can use Twitter as well. Mike Allen shows the handle. You can call or text 573-4BREAD-4, or you can email me mikeallenshow@gmail.com if you want to come on that way. Let's see some of the responses I've gotten. And you know, some of this may be, and it'd be interesting to think about this a little bit, whether it has to do primarily with nostalgia and when you grew up. I'm sure there's some of that. But anyway, so Tom says the 80s, they were so good, they started in 77 and lasted until 92. Steven says he prefers the 1960s, transition to classic rock era, Beatles, Stones, Zeppelin, Cream, Chicago, Simon & Garfunkel, Jethro Tull, etc. Let's see. Pruitt says the 90s, no doubt, he has in quotes, the greatest musical decade ever. I guess a fond of Gwen Stefani and No Doubt. Anyway, let's see, this is where Carmen gets funny. 1740s, Bach's Mass and Handel's Messiah. Beat that. Ann says the 60s, Beach Boys, Jan and Dean, Righteous Brothers. A totally different take on the 60s, I guess, than Stephen had. And let's see, Christy says the 90s and into the early 2000s, filled with all kind of good memories. See, yeah, that's my point, right? Got to be, it's got to be nostalgia, I guess, that drives this. Cheryl says, yeah, the 80s. I'm with you, Cheryl, but then again, Cheryl and I are in the same general age group, I would suspect. So how about you? 573-4-BREAD-4, 573-4-BREAD-4, or email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. And this may tell me, too, a little bit about the demographics of my program. If we don't get any votes in for the 2010s, let's say, or even the 2000s, that'll give us a little insight there as well. All right, so sports action this weekend. Of course, the NBA regular season hits pause for the All-Star Game weekend. I haven't watched an NBA All-Star Game in, it's been a while. And part of it is, I think, just the absolute paucity of defense that is played. And never more on display than it was in the, looking at the score from yesterday's Western Conference All-Stars beating the Eastern Conference All-Stars. How long has it been since the Eastern Conference was a better conference than the West? It's been a while. But anyway, the score, 196 to 173. That's like an old Loyola Marymount, Paul Westhead score from back in the day. I got to check this out really quick. I got to look at the box score. I know there's some people, depending on how you feel about Kobe Bryant, it was evidently quite a Kobe Bryant love fest. Kobe Bryant hanging up now after, 20 years in the NBA? That's amazing. Straight out of high school. I remember when he came out in 1996. Certainly not going out on top, as I'm sure he would have loved to, but honored last night with the All-Star Game festivities. Let's see. Wow. Oklahoma City for the West, well represented with Russell Westbrook with 31 and Kevin Durant with 23. Stephen Curry coming in with 26 points. And then looking down to Anthony Davis. He of the unibrow, 12 of 13 from the field, 24 points, and DeMarcus Cousins with 11. So Kentucky well represented as well. Then you go down the Eastern Conference All-Stars, and Paul George with the big game. Really glad to see him fully bounced back from that horrible leg fracture he had a few years ago with 41 points, and John Wall with 22, second there for the Eastern Conference All-Stars. And setting up for, I think, a compelling story through the second half of the NBA season to see whether or not the Golden State Warriors can, in fact, beat the record of the Chicago Bulls of a 72-10 record. According to RealClearSports.com, Michael Jordan pulled Klay Thompson, the splash of the Splish and Splash brothers, to go ahead and break the record. According to Warriors sideline reporter Rosalind Gold Onwunde, Jordan spoke to Klay Thompson during the All-Star weekend, telling the two guard to go ahead and break the record. Well, I'm glad they have your permission, MJ. Of course, says Jordan's comments likely won't have any impact on Golden State trying to supplant the 95-96 Bulls as the winningest team in NBA regular season history. Still, it's good to see the biggest legend in the game welcome the challenge. Whether or not the Warriors will get to 73 wins is the biggest question in the league. Now, it is, you know, Michael Jordan not exactly bashful about using psychological ploys against his opponents through his playing days. Maybe that's what this is. Maybe it's a little bit like, I remember playing golf with my dad. And fondly, of course, my dad having passed away way too young. But I remember that I was a better golfer than my dad for years. Not that I was a good golfer, don't get me wrong. My dad, like me, was a hacker. But I was a better golfer than him because I played more often than he did. I mean, he was, you know, like doing things like working and supporting our family, and I got to go play golf. So I was a better golfer for him for years before I actually beat him. Because what would happen is invariably we would come down to the last hole. And my dad would say something like this, "Well, congratulations, you've got this." I mean, you're two shots up on me with a hole to play. All you've got to do is play it safe, and I mean, you got this iced away. Well, of course, he was using complete psychological tactics, which unfortunately were often successful, because invariably I would then duck hook one out of bounds or into the woods or whatever. So maybe MJ pulling a little of my dad's psychological, yeah, go ahead, break the record. It's yours for the taking. Anyway, it's a little bit of college basketball this weekend, too. Trying to look back here on the scores that we've got. I was really pleased with my Kentucky Wildcats in a game that I was very concerned about, going down to South Carolina and walking away with a big win, especially with John Calipari kicked out of the game just a couple of minutes in, getting into a confrontation with the official, and UK point guard Tyler Ulis, who in my book is the best Kentucky point guard since Kyle Macy. Now, that's going back a long way, back to the late 70s, early 80s. But Tyler Ulis, no doubt a coach on the floor. Let's see, Michigan State hammering Indiana this weekend, putting a little cold water on Indiana heating up. Always tough to win in Lansing, of course. UNC hammering Pittsburgh. And my buddy Keith, who's screening calls today, happy that his Notre Dame Irish came out with a big win over Louisville. That should crack them into the polls this coming week. We'll start looking at bracketology here soon, as March Madness not that far away. 573-4BREAD-4 if you've got a comment or a question. Let's look at the What Were You Thinking nominees of the day, and we've got several over the course of the weekend that we want to talk about. This one, a little bit disturbing, and Jennifer, who works in the station, I know, posted some photos of her and her husband, Bill, enjoying Valentine's Day at the Waffle House. You gotta love it in marriage when you can have Valentine's Day at the Waffle House and, you know, consider that a romantic evening. Gotta appreciate that. But this puts a little bit of a douses it. Arkansas Waffle House employees work on hair while providing food in the kitchen. The story says, how about some hair with those waffles? Waffle House employees in Arkansas were caught on video doing hair while preparing food for customers. You know, the thing about a Waffle House is all the kitchen is exposed. Evidently, customer Antonio Robinson shocked Friday morning when he saw what was going on in the kitchen of the Forest City restaurant. This woman dipped her hair down in the pot, and when it came back up, she was drying it off with one of the towels. He told WREG News, I see people do that in their houses and things like that, but for a restaurant, I don't know. Well, no, I know, Mr. Robinson. Inappropriate. Attention, health department. Robinson told the station that his friend found hair in his food. Boy, wow. All right, we'll have more. We'll unfortunately can only get through the first nominee. We come back for the break, I'll give you a couple of others, including one from a Kentucky lawmaker, has something to do with Viagra. Hopefully that'll bring you back. It's what we call in the radio biz a tease. This is the Mike Allen Show. We'll be back in just a minute. Yeah, I know what I was feeling.
What was I thinking? Oh, yeah. I'll tell you something. I think you'll understand when I say that.
We're right at the bottom of the hour. This is the Mike Allen Show here on this Monday, February 15th. Asking a question today. That song number one, by the way, from 1964, The Beatles with I Want to Hold Your Hand. And I'm asking, what is your favorite musical decade? Primarily thinking, you know, pop music here. But what is your favorite musical decade? And that, of course, from the 60s. And we're going to be playing a number one song on this date from every decade as bumper music to kind of give us the theme. If you've got an opinion on that, as I said last segment, I suspect our preferences are tied directly with nostalgia, usually to a certain age in our life when music left such a powerful imprint on us and songs tend to stir up memories. But who knows? Maybe we can, you know, break out of that. I know that there are a lot of people, for example, who think this current generation is the golden era of television, even though perhaps they may have warm memories of TV shows they watched as a kid growing up. People like my friend Jason Hall, and he's not alone because of the proliferation of different shows and the ability in that format, shows like Breaking Bad or House of Cards, Game of Thrones, whatever, that this is the golden age of television, even though, you know, they have more nostalgic feelings about a previous era. So maybe we can break out of that, but I'll be surprised if anybody calls up and says this current decade or the 2000s. But maybe that says more about the demographics of my listening audience. 573-4BREAD-4. You can call or text. Email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. Keith standing by to take your call. Or you can post your response on Facebook or on Twitter. Love to hear from you. All right, so let's get back into our What Were You Thinking nominees. We've had one, somebody doing their hair in the Waffle House kitchen. Never a good idea, I would just say. Second, we're going to say gloating drug dealer who posted his gloating on social media. As the story goes, this is from the Mirror. Gloating drug dealer who posted obscene Facebook message to judge after avoiding jail, ordered back to court. So the guy gets off and decided he would mock the judge who spared him jail. Minutes after Daniel Sledden, 27, was given a suspended sentence at Burnley Crown Court, an obscene message appeared on a Facebook account in his name. It said, "I cannot believe my luck. 2-year suspended sentence beats the 3-year jail. Yes, pal. Beverly Lunt, go blank, blank, blank." Daniel and his brother Samuel Sledden, also a convicted drug dealer, are now to be brought back to face Judge Lunt for a review of their sentences next week. A groveling apology has now been posted on the same Facebook page. It reads, "I want to say how sorry I am for what I wrote about Judge Lunt in my sentence. I was very lucky not to be sent to prison, and I was very stupid to have written what I did. I want to say sorry to Judge Lunt and anyone else who was upset or offended by my thoughtless post, which I did not mean." Always ask a friend before you hit post. Oh my gosh. Anyway, all right. But we're going to give the winner to a local Kentucky lawmaker. As so we talked about last week, or was it the week before? I can't remember, with Archbishop Joseph Kurtz and my friend Jason Hall. After many years with the Catholic Conference of Kentucky and other right-to-life groups, the Kentucky governor signing into law the informed consent bill, which would require that any woman who was seeking an abortion to have a face-to-face meeting, either live or in person, or a video conference to talk about it, so that she can be certain of what exactly she's seeking. It was a big victory, really, under the current governor to have that signed. Didn't sit well, evidently, with, I guess, a few pro-choice elected officials. Representative Mary Lou Marzian, a Louisville Democrat, has introduced a bill that would force men who want to use erectile dysfunction drugs, you know, your Cialis and your Viagra, wants to use erectile dysfunction drugs to jump through a series of humiliating hoops beforehand, such as visiting a doctor twice and getting notes from their wives. "I want to protect these men from themselves, Marzian, who is a nurse, said. This is about family values. She also told the Fox affiliate that House Bill 396 would require someone seeking Viagra, Cialis, Levitra, or Vanafil make a sworn statement with his hand on the Bible that he would only use a prescription for a drug or erectile dysfunction when having sexual relations with his current spouse. She said she was inspired by thinking, how would this body of men feel if the government was injecting itself into their private medical decisions? Well, let's break this down a little bit, Representative Marzian. Now, your point is well taken, that yes, someone buying Viagra should only be doing that. Then this is from a Catholic perspective, of course, because the sexual union by its very nature is a marital act, can only be an honest act within the confines of the marital covenant. But this equating of abortion and Viagra is an intellectually dishonest move. Really? In one, for example, there's no loss of life as happens in abortion, the killing of an unborn human person. And besides, and this is where I sometimes hear, and this drives me crazy sometimes when I hear it among Catholics. Oh, well, yeah, well, I hear the Catholic Church saying that we shouldn't use contraception, but I never hear anything about Viagra. Well, because these types of drugs, Viagra, Cialis, are meant to facilitate something that the Church sees as a good. The sexual union of spouses is a good thing that unites the couple. And, of course, where fertility is present, opens them to the gift of life. Contraception, by its very nature, seeks to reduce the sexual act and eliminate from it the possibility of life. Completely different things. So, I mean, she's having her fun. She's making whatever point she thinks she's making. But come on, Representative Marzian, what are you thinking? 573-4BREAD-4, if you want to call, always open to your own nominees for this, or even if you want to nominate yourself, always good for us to laugh at ourselves and tell those stories of dumb things we have done from time to time. 573-4BREAD-4. You can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. As I said, the big news over the course of this weekend, besides the Holy Father's trip to Mexico, and we'll get into all that directly, the death of Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia, who evidently died in his sleep at a hunting cabin there in Texas. He was an avid hunter, died at the age of 79. There'll be no autopsy, evidently. They're confident that his death was one of natural causes. I was stunned to hear it. Not that, I follow it all that closely, but I follow the Supreme Court enough to know what a towering figure Antonin Scalia is and what a profound influence he's had on the court as a jurist, but also what he represents as a Catholic thinker in this country. And so we certainly do pray, as I said, for the repose of his soul, for his wife Maureen, for his 9 children. And I heard 2 different reports, one that he had 28 grandchildren and one that he had 36 grandchildren, but a large brood nonetheless. And I want to talk a little bit about Justice Scalia today, because I think there's a lot we can learn from him and from his public witness as a Catholic. And what we can learn, too, in our increasingly polarized country. One of the things that really disturbed me this weekend, and I guess it shouldn't have surprised me, but the immediate, I mean, within minutes of the news of his death, first, which was rumored online and then finally confirmed through major news outlets, once the story of his death emerged, what you had was it was an immediate, from both sides of the aisle, partisan grab at the narrative. It's like we've come to this place where our political partisanship is so bitter and so deep and profound that we can't even allow ourselves in a moment to recognize the humanity of the person who has passed. All they are is a pawn simply in our own political agenda. And therefore, we have to rush. I mean, could we not have waited through the holiday weekend? Could we not have waited on Tuesday before we made political statements about what we intend to do with his Supreme Court seat? I mean, immediately you had both the president, President Obama, releasing a statement because there was and probably his statement released as a reaction to statements from some Republicans, because immediately the statement was, well, certainly we would hope that the president, as a lame duck president in the last year of his presidency, would not appoint or nominate someone to be in that Supreme Court seat, because the thinking is they've lost a conservative mind, intellect, and voice in Scalia, and therefore The president will be in a rush as the president of the United States, duly elected by the people, to appoint someone of a different judicial mindset. And President Obama, therefore, releasing a statement. I mean, this is within an hour or two of the news breaking of Justice Scalia's death, that he would indeed nominate someone during this calendar year to be brought before the Senate for confirmation. And so already you had this battling. And of course, it wasn't just elected officials. Just all you had to do was go on comment threads and comm boxes online and read some of the horrible things being said. Some rejoicing at Scalia's death because of his conservative voice on the court. We'll get into all that here in just a minute. This is the Mike Allen Show. Minutes before the hour, you're back on the Mike Allen Show on this Monday, February 15th. That song number one, 1977, Little Manfred Mann's Earth Band. I think it was originally put out by Bruce Springsteen, but didn't take off like it did to number one in 1977 by Manfred Mann. Revved Up Like a Deuce, Another Runner in the Night, in case you're wondering. Anyway, so my question of the day is, what is your favorite decade? We're primarily saying pop music. Your favorite musical decade. We were playing through each of our bumpers here from different decades, 50s, 60s, now the 70s. So if you've got a thought on that, 573-4BREAD-4, you can chime in or email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. You can call or text, actually, to 573-4BREAD-4. You can also post your response on Facebook or Twitter. Saw one online resources, 10 songs that define each decade in music, and I'll just give you the number one. Each decade, supposed to be the quintessential song of that decade, I guess, that represents that decade. They go back to the 60s. So they have for the 60s, number one, The Beatles' I Want to Hold Your Hand, which we played last segment. The 70s, Simon and Garfunkel's Bridge Over Troubled Water, wow, not even a disco tune. The 80s, they list Michael Jackson's Billie Jean. The 90s, Whitney Houston's I Will Always Love You, and the double aughts, the 2000s, Outkast's Hey Ya. So, I don't know. I might take issue with that. 573-4BREAD-4 or email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. We were talking a little bit about Justice Antonin Scalia on the bench for almost 30 years, appointed under President Reagan, and talking about the reaction to his death, there was a comment from Tim Stanley, who writes for the London Daily Telegraph and has been a somewhat regular guest on this program. Tim Stanley, I saw, tweeted yesterday, or maybe this was Saturday night, when the news had broken about Justice Scalia's death and there was all this political posturing going on. Tim Stanley tweeting, "Good grief, the man just died. American politics is pitiless." And in fact, it indeed is. As I said, you look at the comm boxes, even people's own social media accounts, Facebook threads, whatever. People who, before the body was even cold, so to speak, already either rejoicing over Scalia's death or panicking over what this will mean to the court. No thought of the death of a faithfully practicing Catholic, the husband and the father and grandfather of a large family. No thought for the repose of his soul. Now, let's contrast this with the statements from the Supreme Court justices themselves, even from those who had a profound difference of opinion than Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia. Let's think about somebody ideologically completely different than Justice Scalia, and that's Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who, by all accounts, had a remarkable friendship with Nino, as they used to call, or Nino, I guess, as they called Justice Scalia. She writes this. This is from Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who, by the way, her friendship with Antonin Scalia inspiring a pop opera called Scalia/Ginsburg. As it says, toward the end of the opera, this is from Justice Ginsburg. Toward the end of the opera, Scalia Ginsburg, tenor Scalia and soprano Ginsburg sing a duet. "We are different, we are one," she says. "Different in our interpretation of written texts, one in our reverence for the Constitution and the institution we serve. From our years together at the D.C. Circuit, we were best buddies. We disagreed now and then, but when I wrote for the court and received a Scalia dissent, the opinion ultimately released was notably better than my initial circulation. Justice Scalia nailed all the weak spots, the applesauce and argle-bargle, and gave me just what I needed to strengthen the majority opinion. He was a jurist of captivating brilliance and wit, with a rare talent to make even the most sober judge laugh. The press referred to his energetic fervor, astringent intellect, peppery prose, acumen, and affability, all apt descriptions. He was eminently quotable," she writes. "His pungent opinion so clearly stated that his words never slipped from the reader's grasp." Justice Ginsburg continues, "Justice Scalia once described as the peak of his days on the bench an evening at the Opera Ball when he joined two Washington National Opera tenors at the piano for a medley of songs. He called it the famous three tenors performance. He was indeed," Justice Ginsburg writes, "a magnificent performer. It was my great good fortune to have known him as working colleague and treasured friend." Of course, you can read comments. I'll post a link to this on the show's Facebook page. These from USA Today. All the various Supreme Court justices offering their thoughts on the passing of this legend. Somebody who, by the way, Slate writer Mark Joseph Stern, who himself would be a liberal in sensibility, writes this: "Antonin Scalia will be remembered as one of the greats. Future Americans will view him as one of the greatest Supreme Court justices rather than an arch conservative." As Stern writes, "When news of Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia's death broke on Saturday afternoon, the partisan split over the justice's legacy was immediately obvious. Some liberals were quick to use his death to jeer Scalia's tenure, largely dwelling on his vociferous opposition to minority rights. Meanwhile, conservatives mourned the loss of their greatest judicial advocate, lauding Scalia as a giant of constitutional law. That's fine and fair," he says. "Scalia was a political lightning rod, repulsing Democrats as he beguiled Republicans." But he goes on to say, "As time goes on and the sharp partisan contours of his most famous ruling blur, I have little doubt that Scalia will be remembered as one of the truly great justices on the U.S. Supreme Court." He goes on to talk about how Scalia was much more nuanced than he was given credit for, and how he mostly put principle even above his politics. And his principle is he was a strict originalist and textualist. In other words, he was somebody who believed that the Constitution of the United States had a particular meaning when it was written, and that was the particular meaning that should prevail. We'll talk a little bit more maybe in the next hour about his views on judicial modesty, despite the fact that Justice Scalia clearly had a healthy ego. He also was a man who had a profound principled belief in the limits of the Supreme Court and took a view that in an interesting way really affirmed the importance of the democratic process. We'll also talk a little bit about his Catholic faith and how his Catholic faith shaped the way that he thought and the way that he approached his work on the bench, which I think is an important part of his legacy as well. And I do want to talk about that, and again, as well as what his friendships with people who thought differently than he in a time of such ridiculous polarization in our politics, how it can be a lesson for us in many ways. I want to look back in history a little bit here on this day, February 15th, as we like to do. What are some things over the years that that have happened.
We're history.
Circuits of history, gentlemen. They'll take us to any point in time we wish.
All right, on this day in 399 BC, going back a ways, philosopher Socrates, sentenced to death by the city of Athens for corrupting the minds of the youth and of impiety. Wow, what a great thinker, too. 1386 AD, Duke Philip the Stout forms the Council of Flanders. Is that the most flattering of nicknames, you know? Duke Philip the Stout. I guess they could have chosen the big boned or the heavy set. Duke Philip the Stout. 1564, Galileo born on this day in Pisa. Don't buy the false narrative, by the way, about his relationship with the Catholic Church. On this day in 1764, the city of St. Louis established, which ordinarily is a great day for celebration. Just wish they'd never formed that baseball club there. Let's see, 1898 on this day. Hugely significant event. The U.S. battleship Maine blew up in Havana Harbor, killing 260 crew members and escalating tensions with Spain. Most historians now say there's really no evidence that Spain had anything to do with the explosion on the U.S. battleship Maine. Wow, if we hadn't rushed to judgment and gone to war with Spain, how different would things be? Puerto Rico, Guam, the Philippines, all impacted by the Spanish-American War, of course. On this day in 1950, Walt Disney's Cinderella released. If you've not seen the recent non-animated version of Cinderella, definitely need to see it. I don't care your age. It's really, really good. On this day, 1961, a tragic day in U.S. Olympic history, the entire U.S. figure skating team of 18 died. Some of you may be old enough to remember that a little bit before my time, but wow, I'd forgotten about that tragedy in the U.S. athletic history. On this day, 1978, I remember watching this. I was 11 years old. Leon Spinks, he of the toothless grin, beat Muhammad Ali in 15. For the heavyweight boxing title. Of course, Ali would come back to take the title again. And on this day, 1996, Bill Belichick fired by the Cleveland Browns. Oh, Browns fans, I'm sorry. We'll be back. This is the Mike Allen Show with a new hour.